friends that were outside there that couldn't get in, so I went out there and talked to them for a while, and they're just already storming the doors of the church here. Thank you, Sherry, for that very kind introduction, and thank you for all the good work that you and the people at KPFA have done over the years. It's greatly appreciated by everybody here and across the country. It always takes me a second to get just adjusted when I'm speaking at an altar. So. And the choir looks so good. Sign the choir. Can you guys sing at all up there? Doe, a deer, a female deer, ray, a drop of golden sun, me, a name, fa, a needle pulling thread, a note to follow so, a drink with jam and bread. Moulin Rouge 3 times already. Is something wrong with me? I just sit there and smile during the whole movie. There's something wanting to just burst out from inside me, and I don't know what it is. it's so bizarre to even be standing here each week and looking at this book, because a few months ago, this was not supposed to happen. And I was convinced that I had finally met my match in terms of the corporate-controlled media in this country, which I've been able to sort of fly under the radar for some time now and get myself out there to a mass audience, mainly because that incredible flaw in capitalism, that's our economic system, that's what they call it, at least. That says that the rich guy will sell you the rope to hang himself with. And so they were willing to put me on TV or on the movie screen or put this book out or whatever because they could make millions of dollars off me. So they turned their heads the other way. They didn't really think about the politics too much. They're not like us. You know, we have, like, feelings and politics and concerns about lots of things, you know. They're just about the bottom line, you know. So you could, you know, if they believe, and this is what was always so weird to me, they believed that from the very beginning, from Roger and me, that there was this, that there was this large audience out there of us. Like, they believed our numbers were bigger than we believed that they were, you know? Otherwise, they'd never put this up out there to begin with, right? It's odd that they, the enemy, believe that we're stronger than we don't or think we are, right? So it's like, So I've always been able to sort of just drive my Mack truck through that thing, knowing that as long as I sell, you know, Doritos in the commercial breaks, you know, not me personally, but they can, you know, put the ads on, I'll still get to get this thing out there. The other part of the equation is that they believe that the people who watch it on TV or watch it in the movie theater, read this book, will do nothing. So it's safe. It's safe to put this out to the American people. They're so sure of that because they know that they have dumbed down and numbed out the minds of the American public to such an extent that once TV Nation or The Awful Truth or Roger and Me is over, people can just turn the dial, go to Everybody Loves Raymond, and not think about it anymore. And that's what they believe. Now, I've always believed something different. I believe that the more they keep putting me out there, the larger this thing grows, the more the information gets out, and as long as I stay true to myself, never pull my punch, always follow my conscience, and never give a damn about any of them, that this will actually grow to be something very large because the American people are, at their core, good. and they have good hearts, and they have good souls, and they have a conscience. That's what I believe, and I've always believed that, and it's where I come from, and I've seen it, and I've lived with it, and grew up with it all my life. And so, to me, it's always been like this race. Who's going to win? You know, the corporate media that believes that, you know, by putting this out there, nothing will happen because the people are too, you know, numb to do anything about it. Or me, who believes that putting this out there, along with everything else that's out there from other people, through their music, through their books, through their whatever, their organizing, everything that people do in their local communities, that we're going to win this race. So that's what I always believe. Until this book, until this past fall. And I wrote this last summer, and it was 50,000 copies of it were printed on September 10th. And they were to be shipped the next day on September 11th. Of course, we all know what happened on that day. And HarperCollins, the publisher, said, well, you know, we're going to wait a few weeks and to see, you know, we're not going to do anything with any of our books. And I said, well, that sounds like a good idea. I don't want to do anything either. And I was stuck out here in California, Los Angeles, and we were out for the Emmy Awards for The Awful Truth. Seems so important now, doesn't it? And so we were stuck, and we couldn't get back to New York. And eventually, after a couple of days, we finally found a place that would rent us a car and drove across the country 3,000 miles to get back home. And so I was in no mood to do anything at that point. We had knew people who died, our line producers we'd worked with just a few months prior. We did this project against the tobacco companies. He was on the Boston plane that went to the South Tower. So our daughter was in New York. We were stuck out here. We couldn't reach her for most of that day. This is all that stuff. You've heard these stories, I'm sure, you know, a thousand times from other people. But so once October rolled around, though, I called up the publisher and I said, you know what should we do here? What do you think? What do you want to do with the book in terms of releasing it? When do you think it should go in the stores? And, you know, whatever. And the publisher said, well, we've had a change of mind about the book. I said, well, what do you mean? Well, we don't believe the book is in keeping with the political climate of our country right now. I said, well, what do you mean? What are you, like meteorologists all of a sudden? What do you mean? Political climate. You realize that the president has a 90%. I'm sorry, I have to do that for as long as he's there. It's 90% approval rating. It's United We Stand. Where have you been? Well, I've been right here in the United States of America, where actually the most American thing you can do is to ask some questions and dissent. That's really, isn't that really what a free society is supposed to be about? Well, that's not exactly how we see it. I said, well, so what do you want to do? Well, we were thinking that maybe you would like to rewrite up to 50% of the book. Specifically the chapters about George W. Bush. And also, if you could change some of these chapter titles, like Kill Whitey. Because you see, Mike, Whitey is not what the problem is today. I said, listen, man, Whitey is always the problem. And remove your harsh criticisms of George W. Bush. And on top of that, we'd like you to change the title, change the cover, and we would like $100,000 from you to pay for the reprinting of the 50,000 copies that went through the reprint.
Oh, sure! No problem!
I said, them. Have you ever felt like you've been trapped in some weird vortex, you know, you just start to spiral downward, you know, and you don't know, like, what happened, right? Everything was one way just a few minutes ago, and suddenly it was all very different. I said, well, you've got to be crazy, man. I'm not going to rewrite 50% of one word. You know, I mean, what is it? I mean, what were these comments about my wardrobe? I'm considered a pretty snappy dresser back in Flint. Got my Michigan State hat on. On wheels. Just in case he's coming back. Ah! It's rough, man. I don't know if you're raised Catholic or not, but it's like you can never flush it all the way up. So for 2 months, there's a standoff between me and HarperCollins. They won't put the book out. I won't rewrite a single word. It's sitting in a warehouse in Scranton, Pennsylvania. 50,000 copies of this book. So anyways, the night of November 30th, I get a call from the editor there, and he says, well, it's not looking good, Mike. Appears that, because there's no movement from your side on this, that we're going to have to pulp all 50,000 copies of the book. And we hold the contract to your book, and you will not be able to take it elsewhere for a year, and therefore the book will be dead. And I remember this, and I know exactly the minute this call came in on that night, November 30th. And because I can just to repeat the story, just like it was the most chilling thing to hear. Something I never thought I'd ever hear. And at one point I'm thinking, well, you know, at least they're putting their politics first for once. At least they finally believe in something, you know? It's not about the money. It's not about the money. And the editor goes, oh, no, it is about the money. We're known now as the September 11th publishers. We've done 4 quickie books about the heroes of September 11th and the autobiography of the police commissioner of New York. And so this doesn't make us look good, this book. We're going to pulp the books unless you change your mind. And I thought, well, you know, looking for the silver lining and looking for, you know, that, you know, it's like, you know, have you ever been that depressed? I mean, you know, we've all been depressed, right? But I mean, you know, that, I mean, it's like, you just, like, it's that moment where you have a decision to make. Drink or laugh. Drink, laugh. Drink, laugh. Drink. I just started laughing because I thought, you know, they're going to pull the book. I thought, you know, this is really, actually, we should feel good about this. It shows how far we've come. We've really pushed the agenda that far that even the right wingers, even the oppressors, are thinking of recycling. You know, it's like, we're going to pull up the books. We're going to recycle your 50,000 copies, Mike. We're not just going to throw them away into the trash. No. We're going to pulp them so that we can print more books by Rush Limbaugh. Same publisher. And of course, the whole time, again, the Catholic thing is like, you know, like right in the back of my skull here, you know, and it's like the whole time I'm going, you know, Mike, you could have gone with a nice little independent publisher in Sonoma County. Oh, you had to get better with the devil. Rupert Murdoch owns HarperCollins, right? Rupert Murdoch. Oh, no. Yeah, you wanted it to be published by the big boys. Oh, I got a book deal. HarperCollins. Look at me. College dropout. I got a book. Yeah. Thousands in Scranton, Pennsylvania are flying out of the warehouse. Visions of And then the whole time I'm going, yeah, you deserve this. You know? It's like, you are paying the price right now. I didn't blame Harper Collins. I didn't blame Murdoch. I blame me. This was all me. I'm getting it. Bend over. Take it again. You deserve it. Next day, I go out to this meeting in New Jersey. Some place in New Jersey, you know. Every place in New Jersey is some place in New Jersey. And it was an annual meeting of New Jersey Citizen Action. They asked me to give, like, the annual address or whatever. So I went out there and I said, look, I just had this horrible thing happen last night. I didn't really plan on saying anything. I got a manuscript of my book here. I don't think anybody's going to be able to read this book. And I told them the story of what had happened. I said, I'd like you, maybe you might be the only ones I'd like you, if you don't mind, I'd just like to read a couple chapters of my book so somebody gets to hear what I have to say. And so I read these chapters. Unbeknownst to me, there's this woman in the audience. She's a librarian. And since when did the librarians get this cult following? You've all lived a long life. If you've ever been in a room where there was a cheer for the librarians, is this not a first? I don't know who she is. I don't know this woman. She goes home after this meeting and gets in the librarian chat rooms on the internet. Are you aware there are librarian chat rooms on the internet? She starts telling all these librarians about this book that's going to be banned. Then some librarian writes a letter and it goes out on the librarian listservs and it starts just filtering out to librarians all across the world, you know? I mean, this is one group you do not want to piss off, man. They've had their budgets cut. They don't get paid anything. Their books are 30 years old, held together with scotch tape and pins and paper clips. You think they're just sitting there going all quiet, mousy like, you know? They want you to be quiet because they're plotting a revolution in their head. Some likely places, doesn't it? It always happens that way, right? Well, you know, a guy and 12 guys who fish. That's all they hear. Fishing guys. There are 12 guys. One of them dropped out in the last round. But you know what I'm saying? You are the weakest link. So, I got a call from Harper Collins. That Monday, the publisher goes, what did you say to the librarians? I don't know any friggin' librarians. What are you accusing me of now? We're getting a lot of angry librarian hate mail. I said, well, this is one terrorist group you don't want to mess with anymore. They got tons of letters from these librarians. Just brilliant, brilliant, mean letters. They called the next day. We'd like to see you over here at HarperCollins. We have a vice president of the News Corp who's flying in for the meeting. News Corp is the... So I go over to this meeting the next day, and I'm like, oh, jeez, what's going to happen now, right? And I asked a friend of mine, I said, hey, do you want a suit? And he says, yeah. I said, go and you come to this meeting, put the suit on, and just say you're my lawyer. Hey, seriously, Charlie, his name's Charlie, he runs home. He's a segment producer on The Awful Truth. He runs home. puts the suit on and he comes back. I said, okay, now all you gotta do is just sit there. Alright, just sit there and look like we're just so out of control. Anything could happen. You gotta look like a lawyer that doesn't play by the rules. He goes, I can do that. He's like 6'4". So we go over there to the meeting, and there's the guy from News Corp, and there's the HarperCollins people, and the guy who's sitting down at the end of the table, just like that scene in Network, right? And he's holding my book, and he goes, this book shall not be published, not in this form. This must go, this title, this cover, these words. What do you mean, kill Whitey? What do you mean, the end of men? So look, you accepted the manuscript. You published it. What's changed? The country has changed. No, the country hasn't changed. The only thing that's changed is that there's an illegal person sitting in the Oval Office. That's what's changed. The door opens and an editor comes in the room and says, sorry I'm late. Just flew in on the shuttle from D.C. down there for a meeting with Jesse Helms for his autobiography. It's like, yeah, but you get it, right? The Catholic, the nuns are in my head, you know? They're all, that's what you're in business with, Mike. Jesse Helms people.
Yeah, but Jim Hightower, he publishes a book by the same publisher, isn't it? Jim does it, it's okay. Fox is the Simpsons.
Oh, he's rationalizing. I said, look, I gotta tell you something. I'm not rewriting anything in this book, and I've been quiet about this long enough. So in about 24 hours, I'm gonna go public with what you've done. And people are gonna know you as censors. And we'll see how many authors want to come and publish their book at the censoring publishing house. This is my lawyer over here, Charlie. He doesn't say much. He doesn't have to. He's already filing the papers. Right in his head. The papers are in his head. So nice during these few months that you've been sticking it to me. And every month that goes by, I can't believe I'm sitting here now. I'm sitting here now. This is now. We're in December, right? I'm sitting here. You know, what's to say here that I wrote last spring? Kenneth Lay. What's to say that I wrote here last June? Arthur Anderson. What's to say here that I wrote in July? Enron. Damn it. You know? This is what this country's got to do about people like you. Because you're the people who are destroying our freedom, not some boogeyman 10,000 miles away. You're the people who are doing it. And I am just sick and tired of it. And I was looking like I was completely... Charlie's just there the whole time. Charlie was the one on The Awful Truth where we did the death penalty contest between Jeb Bush and George W. Bush, sibling rivalry to see who could execute more people, and we took the cheerleaders down to the executions in Texas and in Florida. That's Charlie, okay? Sick. Well, they blinked. And at the end of it all, they said, okay, fine, you win. We're going to put your book out, uncensored, untouched, just as we printed it. We're not printing anymore, though, because I'll tell you what, you've done the wrong thing, Mike, because this book, you are not in touch with the American people. And this book is going to bomb. And, you know, enjoy the few copies that will sell to to your friends in Madison, Ann Arbor, and Berkeley. Believe them. I was so like, oh, well, I just screwed myself. I don't care. I've never cared. I've never given a shit about anything. I really don't. I mean, I end up giving a shit a lot because I don't give a shit about anything. If you know, if you get into the zen of that at all, there's, it's like you can't ever care about what they're offering you or what they hold in front of you or what they threaten you with. You'll never have another book out again. What publisher would ever want to touch you now? Your career is over. You say, man, I've been listening to that since the seventh grade guidance counselor said. I mean, it didn't work then, and it doesn't work now, all right? Just, like, put a sock in it, you know? What a lie. Well, the book came out 2 weeks ago yesterday. Within 24 hours, it goes to number one on the Amazon.com bestseller list, which is... This is the list of all their books, hardcover, paperback, fiction and nonfiction combined. More than Grisham, more than Clancy, more than Bill O'Reilly. You know? And they freak over at HarperCollins. Oh, oh, oh. Oh, oh. 12 hours later, it goes to number one on BookSense, so the independent bookstore's bestseller list. Then it goes to number one on Powell's.com, the union online bookstore. Then, by the fifth day, it had gone into its ninth printing. Alright? They didn't have any books. Within the week, it had sold more in 1 week than Downsize This did in a whole year. Now they're totally discombobulated by the whole thing. What about the 80% approval ratings? You know, it's like there's something going on here, and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Murdoch? Now, see, I'm telling you all this because not because I'm like, oh, what? You know, I never got into that, but I'll tell you, it's just so uplifting. It's so just. I'm just the ultimate revenge that, and I knew in just deep down in my gut that we really are the majority in this country. We're not the fringe. We're not the minority. This really is what the American public believes. It's debuting at number three this Sunday on the New York Times bestseller list, and I just got the word. And we just hit those redwoods. We're coming down from Eureka, where we did a book signing last night. And we hit those, what are they called? The Avenue of the Giants? Is that what it was? Man, have you ever been up there? That's the first time I saw that. I was like, this is really cool. But just as we hit those redwoods, the phone rang from New York to say that it had just jumped to number two on the New York Times bestseller list. All that stood in front of it was that right-wing book by Bernard Goldberg called Bias. That was it. And it was like, wow, this is like, the redwoods are really cool. You know, sometimes I got listening to some talk radio here the other day. All the pundits and all these people, well, what's going on? What does this mean? What's going on? Hey, let me tell you what's going on. That 80% approval rating, the American people, you know, listen, the average American, right? When any group of human beings feels threatened, when they feel they're, you know, that they're under attack, or there's a crisis, or that, you know, their loved ones may be killed, they have a tendency to rally behind the leader. I mean, that's what humans do. And if that's all the leader is, if that's all you got, that's, you know, you got to kind of, you know, it's like, Americans don't love George W. Bush, it's more like love the one you're with. You know, that's what we got, you know, that's what we got to go with, you know? That's what that is. You know? He won, I guess. I don't know. I guess he won. I don't know. You know? Bush was like that Australian speed skater. You know, the guy that hung back in last place because he couldn't. He was the worst skater. You know that? and the five skaters ahead of him smashed into each other, and he skated through and got the gold medal. That's Bush. The loser is the winner. Well, I guess he skated across the line first. Now we gotta go and get the gold medal, I guess, huh? And you know, the poor and the working people of this country, it's their kids that are sent over there to die, right? So the average person up there who's working, or who's poor, or poor and working, doesn't want to see their kids die. So in their mind, they try to think, well, you know, we don't want to say anything, you know, right now to upset anything, because we want them to come back. That's what it is. It's that good heart, that good soul that's in the average person. It's not about George W. Bush. If anything, what they see is they see a country that's shredding its constitution, that's taking away our civil liberties, that's taking away actual people, citizens of this country, and putting them in jails, but we don't know where they're at. We don't know how many there are. We don't know what their names are. I mean, this is what's been going on the last few months in the United States of America. That's the climate. That's the political climate. And so if you're living out in the middle of the country and it's 9 o'clock at night and you get a phone call from some stranger who says he's a pollster and things are just a little creepy right now, and the pollster says on the phone, we'd like to know just one question, one answer to one question. Do you approve of the President of the United States? Say these days. Yes! Yes, I approve! Don't take me away! I love the president! Please! Everyone in the house approves! The dogs approve! The cat approves! Approve, cat! Got the 80% approval rating? That's not where people are at. We live in a very liberal, progressive country. We should feel very good about this. Oh, I know. It's hard to believe. I know. Hard to believe, especially sitting here. In the great state that gave us Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, Bob Dornan. Thank God for Barbara Lee. I put a picture up on my website as our profile in courage. Man, the hate mail that came from that. Unbelievable. Oh, well. That's just those people. They're all nervous because they know they're in the minority. They know we're in the majority. You know, think about this. The majority of Americans are very liberal on all the issues. They are. Last Labor Day, 58% of the American people said that they support labor unions. 58%. Only 12% belong to the union, but 58% consider themselves pro-labor. That's good news. 63% now consider themselves pro-choice. That's good news. When asked the question, are you for equal pay for equal work or for women's rights, the polls always have shown over 80% of the American public are in favor of that, and 85% consider themselves pro-environment. That's at least how they feel. They wouldn't call themselves liberals or progressives or leftists or whatever, but generally in their heart, they tend toward that way. Only on the death penalty is the public not liberal. But that number has dropped from 75% approval down to about 57% approval, because once the American public saw, as those kids at Northwestern University proved, when they got five people off death row that shouldn't have been there, as nobody should be there, but these people were innocent. Fellow Americans, that when they see that happening, when they see that possibly innocent people might be 75% to 57%. Just like that. In a short period of time. That's a good thing. Okay, I'm citing polls that were taken in the pre-Ashcroft era when people willingly gave answers on the telephone. No, but just think about this. What Americans don't like to do is elect liberal leaders, the so-called liberal leaders, the Democrats. That's what they don't like. Because liberals, to most Americans, look like a bunch of wimps who don't believe in anything and will change their mind at the drop of a dime. Not a dollar, just a dime. They're very cheap, the Democrats. That's why only 30% of Enron's money went to them. You can buy them real cheap. They're like the Hugo of politics, you know? Occasionally they run. Sometimes they work. They're cheap. You know? They don't like, the American public does not like the liberal leaders and rarely will vote for them because they don't have the courage of their convictions. The average human being doesn't, here in this country, does not consider themselves a liberal, a conservative, or Democrat, or Republican. But they do admire and appreciate somebody who stands up for what he or she believes in. And that's called the right-wing Republican conservatives because they, man, damn, they believe in everything. I mean, they, and everything they believe in, they just, I mean, they just, well, they wake up in the morning, man, just ready to go out there and eat us alive. Right? I mean, we don't even see the morning. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're up at the crack of dawn, man. The right winger is up and ready to go. I'm going to go screw the poor today. Yeah. Dollars. And they're so organized. They're so good at it. Man, they're just like, they're not like us. We're all so loosey-goosey. You know, they're, the conservative people, the right wingers, they never lose their car keys, man. It's like they know where everything is. They got a little hook for everything. Here's my Beamer key. Here's my SUV key. Here's my second SUV key. Man, we're like, you see the keys, man? No. What are we going to have for dinner? I don't know. What do you want? I don't know. Where do you want to go? You know, the right winger. Damn it! We're going to Denny's. You know what I'm saying? In fact, I got a whole week lined up. Tonight it's Denny's, tomorrow night it's Sizzler. You know people like this in your family, right? You grew up around some of these people, right? They're just, God, no wonder they win all the time, right? They're just like, they just got it so together, man. You know, look at us. You know, it's like, you know, that's what I mean. Jeez. You know, I'm taking a lot in that I'm thinking about this for myself here. You know, what's my complicity in this problem? I don't know. I read you something here from the book. They wouldn't, the publisher would not fly me out to California. So I had to figure out how to get out here on my own. It's true. And in their further attempts to kill the book after they decided to put it out, they said, well, we're going to send you to three cities on your tour. New York. It's like I'm sitting there in the room with them on 51st and gee, thanks. Ridgewood, New Jersey. Where's that? Anybody ever hear of it? It does exist. Yeah, I was there. I know. And Arlington, Virginia. Where the Pentagon is, man. What is that all about? Oh, they thought they had me there. Ridgewood, New Jersey, it was like 1 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, too. That was the food sign. So I go out there to Ridgewood, and I pull onto the little main street, and there was a line snaking out the door all the way down the block in this little town with a Republican congressman, down the stairs, into the basement, hundreds of people inside, hundreds outside can't get in, there's not enough books. 2 days later, they sent me to Arlington, Virginia. The place, again, is packed. Nobody can get in. It's, you know, similar to the scene in Arlington, Virginia. Can I go to DuPont Circle? No, you're going to Arlington. You know, but then I say, that's just me. You know, right? No, this is where we need to be. We need to be in Arlington, Virginia. You know, that's right, you know? So anyway, so I called up the people at Politically Correct, and I said, hey, man, they won't send me up to California. You know, will you send me up? I mean, can I get on the show or something? And I said, you know, fly me out. So they said, yeah, so I'm going to tape the show tomorrow night down in L.A. Yeah, I don't know if it's on tomorrow night or Friday, or Friday night. But my sister and my brother-in-law and my niece live over in Nevada County. And so my sister put together this little book tour, and so we did all these little towns in Northern California, ending up up there in Eureka, Arcata. And it's been like this every night, where we've had to do like one group for a couple hours, and then they go, and then the next, you know, 500 come in, and we do it again. And it would really lift your spirits to see it, this happening in the little podunk places in the state, not just in real life. So I'd like to read a little bit from the from this chapter that they drove them nuts called Kill Whitey. I don't know what it is, but every time I see a white guy walking toward me, I tense up. My heart starts racing, and I immediately begin to look for an escape route and a means to defend myself. I kick myself for even being in this part of town after dark. Didn't I notice the suspicious gangs of white people lurking on every street corner, drinking Starbucks, and wearing their gang colors of Gap Turquoise or J. Crew Mauve? What an idiot! Now the white person is coming closer, closer, and then... he walks by without harming me, and I breathe a sigh of relief. White people scare the crap out of me. This may be hard for you to understand, considering that I am white, but please take a look back at my life with me and see that a strange but unmistakable pattern seems to emerge. Every person who has ever harmed me in my lifetime, the boss who fired me, the teacher who flunked me, the principal who punished me, the kid who hit me in the eye with a rock, the other kid who shot me with his BB gun, the executive who didn't renew TV Nation, the guy who was stalking me, the accountant who double-paid my taxes, the drunk who smashed into me, the burglar who stole my stereo, the contractor who overcharged me, the girlfriend who left me, the next girlfriend who left even sooner. Stole the checks from my checkbook. Every one of these individuals has been a white person. Coincidence? I think not. I have never been attacked by a black person, never been evicted by a black person, never had my security deposit ripped off by a black landlord, never had a black landlord, never had a meeting in a Hollywood studio with a black executive, never seen a black agent, never had a black person deny my child the college of her choice. Never been puked on by a black teenager at a Motley Crue concert. Never been pulled over by a black cop. Never been sold a lemon by a black car salesman. Never seen a black car salesman. Never had a black person deny me a bank loan. Never had a black person try to bury my movie. And I've never heard a black person say,
we're going to eliminate 10,000 jobs here. Have a nice day. And yet, when I turn on the news each night, what do I see again and again? Black men alleged to be killing, raping, mugging, stabbing, gangbanging, looting, rioting, selling drugs, pimping, hoeing, having too many babies, grabbing babies and tenement windows, fatherless, motherless, godless, penniless. The suspect is described as a black male. The suspect is described as a black male. The suspect is described as a black male. No matter what city I'm in, the news is always the same. The suspect is the same identified black male. I'm in Atlanta tonight, and I swear the police sketch of the black male suspect on TV looks just like the black male suspect I saw on the news last night in Denver and the night before in Los Angeles. In every sketch, he's frowning, he's menacing, and he's wearing the same damn knit cap. Is it possible that it's the same black guy committing every crime in America? In Roger and Me, there's a bunny lady, and she clubs a little bunny, a little cute, cuddly bunny, and she clubs the bunny, and it's disgusting. And for 10 years, if I had a nickel for every person that came up to me and said, "That was just so horrible. You put that in the movie and they caught that little bunny. Why'd you do that? I just don't understand." I got an R rating for that. That's why they gave Roger and Me an R rating, because the bunny got clubbed. No, if Fender Motors ruins the lives of 30,000 people, no problem. PG-13. Little bunny gets clubbed. R. Respect it. We must not show that. 2 minutes later in the film, a black man is shot by the Flint police on camera. Right there in Roger and Me. Remember it? Nobody? Anybody? No. Because I'll tell you what, I have not once in 10 years had a single person come up to me and say, "I can't believe you put that in the movie, a black man was shot. Oh my God, wonderful, that wonderful black man was shot in your movie. Why did you do that?" Not once. Why not? Why not? Why not? Because I'll tell you why. We are so numb to it all. We expect black men to be shot. That's the image we've seen over and over and over and over again. Black guy, oh, he got shot. No, just another dead black guy. Yep, just a black guy getting shot there. Yeah, it doesn't affect us anymore. Yes, the Brussels sprouts. Just another black guy. No, you can look at the news. There's no problem. There's another black guy getting killed there. That's okay. Yeah, no problem. Cuddly bunny rabbit, just the black guy. Just the black guy. Just the black guy. You know, racism is like this open wound, this sore, this cancer on our country, and we have refused to deal with it. We continue to refuse to deal with it. We allow it to be used to separate us, those in power. We know this, especially in the place where I come from, where whites and blacks, you know, and whites believe this, and it's that, because in order to keep people down, that's what you've got to do. You've got to really use, that's the real race card. That's the card that's played on all of us from the day we're born, us white people I'm referring to. It's got to change, man. It's really got to change. Sorry to be bringing it up, because we aren't supposed to really talk about it anymore. Not since the LA riots, not since the OJ verdict. Why were those black kids applauding? Did you see that they were applauding the verdict? Why did they do that? Why? I don't understand. No, so we don't talk about it anymore. We don't talk about it anymore. I've been making this movie for the last couple of years. It's going to be my next documentary feature. It'll be out later this year. It's called Bowling for Columbine. And maybe I should say, I hope it'll be out later this year. I really don't, like, sit up late at night thinking of ways to put myself through a lot of shit. I really don't. I'm the kind of guy that likes the easy path in life. Seriously, if you knew me, I mean, I'm telling you, I would always rather choose the easier way.
this movie, the title comes from the fact that the two kids that did the killings at Columbine didn't want to miss their first class that day, the killings, their bowling class. So they went and bowled two games in their first hour class and then went and participated in the other All-American sport. And so the film, I started this shortly after Columbine, and it was going to kind of be about guns and all this, but as I dug into this more, the film became something. Well, I went to Canada because I thought, well, Shaw, Canada's, you know, they've got these good gun control laws, and that's why they don't have many murders up there. Well, it turns out of 10 million homes in Canada, there's 7 million guns. There are more hunters in Canada than hockey players. 7 million guns laying around, and they kill only a little over 100 people each year. Out of 30 million people, 100 murders, and half of them are either committed by Americans or with American guns. Now, this kind of blew my whole kind of thinking, because I thought, well, if we just have more gun control, we'll have less violence in this country. That's all we need to do. We just need to put the guns away. Then we'll be okay. And then it's like, no, maybe not. Maybe there's something else going on here. The Swiss, it's a law in Switzerland. You have to have a gun in every home. I hate to say anything good about the Swiss, but, you know, there's a gun in every house. They had like 80 murders last year. What's that all about? You know, why do the Canadians kill each other? And you take a look at how they decide to live and how they decide to take care of each other and how they have a safety net and how they don't leave. You know, we're in Windsor, Ontario, and I say to the guy in the bar, where do I go to talk to some indigent people here in town? And he looked at me like, indigent? What's that? I mean, it's not that they don't have poor people in Canada. Their unemployment rate is twice ours. Their kids listen to Marilyn Manson. They watch violent movies. They play violent video games. They do all that stuff. They don't kill each other, though. And they don't do that in virtually any other country on this planet. So what is it about us? What is it about the American psyche that makes us want to pick up the gun? That makes us want to have 250 million guns in our homes? What are we afraid of? Well, it's kind of how that's the way we were founded, actually, wasn't it? We came here in fear, we, the white people, right? Ran in fear, we were afraid of being persecuted, right? So we came across the Mayflower, right? Come to America, where are they from? They run into the Indians, they get afraid of the Indians. So they kill the Indians. Then they get afraid of each other, so they burn witches. Always living in fear. Then they're afraid the British are going to come back. Oh, we need a Second Amendment. So everybody keep their guns. Keeps the British come back. I mean, what's the worst thing to do to a paranoid is have their fears come true? British come back. That's the way we are. That's the way we live our whole lives this way. You aware of this? I mean, by 1840, the slave population in this country, down south, it outnumbered the white population by a 3-to-1 margin. We've gone from 700,000 slaves in 1776 to about 5 million slaves in 1840. So now whitey was outnumbered. And lots of slave rebellions and uprisings, and masters getting his head chopped off, and white people freaking out. And so along comes Samuel Colt in 1840 and invents the six-shooter. And for the first time in human history, we as human beings are able to fire a weapon more than once at a time. And so everybody down south straps on the portable six-shooter, tries to contain the last 20 years of slavery, and with a gun, Civil War comes, it's over, white people scared shitless again, that blacks down there are going to want some revenge. So they pass laws making it illegal for blacks to own guns. The Supreme Court upholds the law. And in 1871, within just 2 months of each other, two organizations are formed in 1871, the Ku Klux Klan and the National Rifle Association. For the next 80 years, the gun is used, the gun, the rope, the violence, to contain a whole race of people who then by the 1950s decide to rise up again. And once they rise up in the 50s and 60s, what do white people do? Run away! Run away! Welcome. We now have the suburbs. Where'd that name come from? The suburbs. They should be called like the bigot burbs. You know? That's why they were formed. Run away, bad people! Raise them up! So they go out there, and 95% of all the guns in this country are bought by white people. So there's this racial underpinning. to this fear, the constant fear of a nation living like a bunch of chihuahuas all scared and frightened. The wolf is always at the door when you're an American. Yeah, I interviewed all these Canadians in the cities. They don't lock their doors. You know they don't lock their doors? I said, have you ever been a victim of crime? Oh, yeah. You don't lock your doors? No. What are you, nuts? No, I choose not to live my life behind a locked door. I don't see it as locking them out. I see it as locking me in. Oh, wow, man. What about them? The them. The them, the them, the them that are coming to the door. The hordes. Aren't you worried? Aren't you afraid? And you see, you create a nation like this that's so freaked out. It's very easy then to convince people that there's one boogeyman out there who's going to kill all of you. His name is Osama bin Laden, the master evildoer. Oh, oh, Osama, oh, he's going to kill me. He's going to kill me. Now he's going to kill me, George W. Bush. Kill him first. Go kill him for me. I will smoke him out of his cave, and I'm going to kill him. We're going to go kill Osama bin Laden. Ah, that's like brilliant foreign policy, man. I'm going to kill Osama bin Laden. Can you imagine Franklin Roosevelt 50, 60 years ago standing in front of a podium, sitting in front of a podium, going, our job is, we're going to go kill Hitler. We're going to go kill him. We're going to kill that Hitler guy. It's a little more complex than that, isn't it? Not just Hitler. Jeez. Okay, so we're all going to go kill Osama bin Laden. We're going to kill him. Yeah, yeah, all right, yeah, let's go kill him. And then, like 2 days after September 11th, I go to the jump page of the Washington Post of some story, and I gotta tell you, folks, I gotta honestly, I never was a very good newspaper reader because it involved a lot of work. And the concept of the jump page, I never understood. Are you supposed to read all six stories on the front page, the first like five paragraphs, then go and read them in the same order you just read them in? Or are you just supposed to read one story, five paragraphs, jump to page 23, read that all the way to the end, and go all the way back to the front page, start the second story, jump to page 17, read that all the way? Am I? I'm not the only one with this problem, right? Yeah, what's wrong? We all skim the paper. We read the headline, the first five paragraphs, okay, we got it down. Okay, let's go, you know? That's it, right? That's the way I always did it. It was just too much aerobic activity. It was just too... Well, anyways, I started reading the jump page, man. That's where the shit is. It's on the jump page. The stuff is on the jump page. You gotta go to the jump page. Because here's what it said on the jump page 2 days or 3 days after September 11th. Osama bin Laden, buried now in paragraph 54. Osama bin Laden, or Osama bin Laden, if you happen to be watching the Fox News channel, they spell it with a U. USAMA. Hey, we funded him, we trained him to be a terrorist, we put the USA in Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden, the paragraph says, is on dialysis and has been for 18 months. He is failing kidneys and some believe he is near death. Did anybody catch that at the time? Did you see this? They've started to talk about it now, you know, months later. And I never saw it again after that. And it's like, what happened? You know, it's like, because right there, Bush lost me, man. You're telling me that the monster, the mastermind of all evil, is hooked up to a kidney machine in a cave? And he's running from cave to cave with a kidney machine hooked up? Doesn't have a pot to piss in, he can't piss in the pot? This is the guy? Who's gonna kill me? What's it like? Is there a dialysis machine in every fifth cave? see, but whoever wrote that story was off message. It was off script. Because you see, here in Hollywood, we like to have it simple. Just one antagonist will do. Just one bad guy. That's all the American people can handle. Just one evil doer. Right? One evil doer at a time, at least. So it's Osama bin Laden. Did you see this guy in his last funniest home video that he sent over in December? Where his skin was green and he was all gaunt? Any doctors or nurses in the audience tonight? What is that? And kidneys!
I'm going to kill all Americans.
My apologies to all in the room with bad bladders, but come on! Are we stupid? Are we supposed to believe this? Then you go to another jump page and you find out that the Bin Laden family funded George W. Bush's first oil venture called Arbusto back in the 80s. Are you aware of this? Arbusto, funded with Bin Laden money. And then George Sr. has been in business with the Bin Ladens for the last 10 years with James Baker and his Carlyle Group, little investment thing they got going with the Bin Laden family. Whenever George Sr. stays in Saudi Arabia, he stays at the Bin Laden Palace. You know, and some guy said to me, you can't just be painting all the Bin Ladens with a big brush stroke like that. Come on, you know, I mean, just, you can't blame the parents because the kid goes wrong, you know, right? You're absolutely right, and I feel bad. I hope nobody misunderstands me. That's not what I mean. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just wondering, you know, do you think, like, Barbara and George Bush would be having sleepover at Charles Manson's parents' house, you know? I mean, I'm sure they're good people too, salt of the earth, Mother Teresa types. You know, no fault of their own that Charlie went bad. You know, or do you think you'd see them there, maybe not? What's that all about? Go to the BBC website, you can look up a story from 1995 which says, Taliban delegation hosted by Houston oil executives in Houston while George W. Bush was governor, to discuss the building of a Unital pipeline across the country of Afghanistan. Are you aware of this? Is anybody jumping to the jump page? This is all, you can get those very mainstream sources. It's all there. It's in the Times, it's in the Post, it's in the LA Times. You know, you can get it in the Nation, you can get it in KPFA, you can get it from, you know, all those. But I'm telling you, it's actually there in their media. If you look for it, it's there. It's there. What's it all mean? I don't know. I'm not drawing any conclusions here. But I sure have a few questions. I'm reading the November 12th New Yorker, a fine publication, an article by a woman by the name of Jane Mayer, and in the article it says that in the days after September 11th, when no plane was allowed to fly and no cell phone was allowed to go off anywhere in America, my choir will start singing that cell phone tune. You bet. You guys are ready to go anytime, right? In the skies over America, September 13th, no planes were allowed to fly, except one. A private Saudi jet that went to four or five American cities and picked up nearly two dozen members of the Bin Laden family and their associates. Are you aware of this? Check it out. Don't take my word for it. It does not come from my black helicopter site. It is in the November 12th New Yorker magazine. Why? The FBI was furious. Because usually the police in a murder investigation, when they can't find the murderer, like to go and talk to the family members. What do you know? What can you tell us? You know, a little interrogation. Nothing, not arrest them or hurt them or anything. Just a couple questions. Usually, when they can't find the murderer, that's what the police do. But no, the Bush administration told the FBI, no, you cannot talk to the Bin Ladens. And they scooted him out of the country. Why? Why? What's the deal with this Unical pipeline? And, oh my God, what's this on this jump page? Halliburton was involved, was going to be involved in its building, this Unocal pipeline across Afghanistan, and that Cheney was involved in numerous conversations with the Taliban in the 90s about the Unocal pipeline. What happened? Deal go south? Taliban do something wrong? 15 of the 19 hijackers are from Saudi Arabia, but we bomb Afghanistan. Do you know what the Martians would think of that if they landed here and were watching us right now? 15 of the 19 came from Saudi Arabia, but they bombed Afghanistan. Maybe they missed. Can't bomb the oil supply, can we? Can't bomb the business buddies of Poppy. Right? 15 of the 19 from Saudi Arabia. You think if 15 of the 19 were from Cuba, we'd be bombing Peru? I'm just floating the question. I don't know. What do you think? Think so? No, I don't think so. Well, Mike, Afghanistan, the Taliban, they were harboring bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. They were harboring them. Yeah, well then Bush, why'd you give them $43 million of our tax money last May? Why'd you do that? It was humanitarian aid. Oh, really? Humanitarian. Oh, we're humanitarians, and the Taliban are humanitarians. So we're going to give them $43 million of our tax money? May 2001. Look it up. It's in the May 22nd issue of the LA Times. Are we stupid? Huh? Are we stupid? Huh? I guess they think we're stupid. What's really going on here? What's really going on? Since when are we, you know, bombing Afghanistan and killing those people? As Ralph said the other day, he's like, we went over to burn down the haystack to find the needle. And we didn't find the needle. What's that all about, man? Huh? I mean, since when does the government, first of all, our government, ever go after the landlord? That's what Afghanistan wants, right? The landlord for Al-Qaeda. Huh? When does the local government here ever go after the landlord on our behalf? After the landlord. Can't buy my own supply. Gotta keep the SUVs going. Gotta keep the business relationships going. Okay. Well, I'm not in favor of bombing anybody, actually. But I find it kind of curious, the whole thing. And now we've got our axis of evil to distract us from Enron. Isn't that brilliant? God, I guess he believes we don't see through that. Right? Enron. I don't have to tell this crowd. You know all about it, right? This thing stinks to the high heavens. It's not just about the fact that the Enron vice president becomes the secretary of the army, or the Enron lawyer becomes the White House counsel, or the head of Enron, Mr. Ken Lay. Ken Lay. I was writing this book last spring. I ran across that guy's name. What the hell? What kind of name is that? Ken Lay. It's like a star of one of those like late night Cinemax movies, you know? Starring Ken Lay. Co-starring Bill Studd. With Ken Lay. Nobody's called Ken Lay. The pod people have taken over, folks. It's like Ken Lay. Ken Lay. Ken Lay handpicks the head of the regulatory agency that's supposed to oversee Enron. And then Enron's accountant, Arthur Anderson, a lawyer of theirs, becomes the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, the very agency that's supposed to oversee the phony baloney crapaloney stock prices of Enron, the seventh largest company in America. And it's just a house of cards. It's all a bunch of BS. Are they the only ones? I don't think so. Are they the tip of the iceberg? I think so. I think so, folks. And I'll tell you, gotta thank George and Kenny Boy for this great organizing tool, because Mr. and Mrs. America right now, tonight, is scared shitless that their 401k may not be there. You know, that was the one thing we were sure was going to be there, the 401k, because we knew the Social Security was going to be there. So instead of doing our work as citizens and organizing and making sure it would be there, oh yeah, let's just go play in the stock market and get our 401ks, then we'll be safe, we'll have a retirement, we'll be safe. Right? So all of middle America gets sucked into the stock market, and they get their 401ks, and now all of them tonight are wondering, are they going to lose their pensions? Are they going to be without? Do you know what that feels like?
Do you have any idea? And do you think that they can't put two and two together? They're thinking, you mean all those people down in Houston who work for the best friend and the number one contributor to the president, for those of you listening on radio, those are quotation marks, president of the United States? You mean if that company isn't going to be saved, what's going to happen to me? What's this guy up to? Who is this guy in the White House? You know what? I got to say it. I'm going to say it as plainly and as clearly as I can say it. And I'm going to say it. I've said it for 2 weeks. And I'm going to say it for the rest of this book tour. And I'll say it until they stop me from saying it. Anybody who would steal our White House in that manner is capable of doing anything. If you so detest the American public, if you hold them in such contempt that you would actually take their house when they didn't vote for you, when you are not there at the will of the people, but at the good graces of your dad's friends on the Supreme Court, and the funny business that took place with Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush, and how they prevented thousands of African Americans from voting down in Florida. If that's why you're there, and you hate us and this country that much that you would do that, what else would you do to us? How many more Americans have to die because of your greed? That's what I want to know. And I would like everybody in this room, I would like everybody in this room to call the White House tomorrow morning or tonight when you get home and ask that very question. Don't be afraid. Of course, they're taking your phone numbers down. But they can't take all this money. I want you to call the White House. What's that number? 202? Anybody know it off the top of your head? 1414. I know the last four digits. I can't remember. 4 or 5, thank you. Thank you for knowing that. A librarian, right? (laughs) 202-456-1414. And ask 5 questions. How come you let the plane fly around America to pick up the Bin Ladens? What are the financial connections between the Bin Ladens and the Bushes? What about that Unocal pipeline across Afghanistan? What else did you do for Ken Lay? Number five, when are you going to resign and take Dick Cheney?
I personally have called for George W. Bush to resign on opening day of baseball season. He likes baseball, and I asked him to do it in the middle of Enron Field in Houston. It's April 2nd at 4:05 p.m. on opening day. The Astros are playing the Brewers. The Brewers are owned by Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball. I thought that had a nice little touch to it. You know, maybe, you know, Bush could be the commissioner of baseball, something, you know. Just come out to the pitcher's mound, put your hat over your heart like Lou Gehrig, and apologize to the American people. Take Big Dick with you. I'll throw out the opening pitch. I'll bring my choir to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and we'll get our country back. Let me just suggest a couple of things that I think that we can do actually to help take the country back. And I'm going to offer just a couple of suggestions, because I'm really appealing not to the hardcore committed political activists here in the audience tonight. We know who you are. God bless you. You're already going to heaven, right? You said right. When you hate to like start like a really good kind of like thing, you know, about, you know, love your neighbor, do good to those who persecute you. You'll be judged by how you treat the least among us. And then like the symbol of that philosophy is you like hanging dead. You know, like the Kennedy dollar, you know, except it would be Kennedy, like, with his brains coming out and kneeling back. We wouldn't do that, would we? Right? We wouldn't do that. Why'd we do that to him? He had some good ideas. Man, that sucks. I'm really... At least he's not up there right now.
The Protestant church.
Oh, it's a Protestant church. Okay, yeah, okay. Oh! The nuns told us about the Protestants. They never called it the public schools. They called it the Protestant schools when we were Catholics. Oh, well, those kids go to the Protestant school. Well, where did the Jews go? Shut up. I am like, so this is not for the hardcore. Right now, just, you know, light up something or just go into your head and think some thoughts. this is for the slackers amongst us tonight. I am the original slacker, all right? And if you really knew me, and my sister's here, she can vouch for this, my wife's here, they both can vouch for this, I am truly, all appearances aside, I am one of the laziest people on the planet Earth. I can get 5 or 6 hours of TV watching in a day, that's a good day for me. Alright? Man, that lazy boy, I just cranked that thing back. That is a good day. She's gonna be smiling, just the thought of it right now on this little tour. No lazy boys anyway, you know, I'm just. But that's, I've been that way my whole life. And this is kind of like the blessing and the curse here for me when I was a teenager. Because it's kind of the thing that's, you know, kept me going and wanting to do all this stuff. But not wanting to spend a whole lot of time on it. but I've really seen how that if we're ever going to win, if we're ever going to beat the people that have got little hooks for their keys, you know, we've got to broaden the church. We've got to make the tent bigger. We've got to open it up to the people who don't think politically and who are actually kind of put off by politics. Yet, they share so much of the same things that we believe in. So if there's a way to make this bigger, we're going to win this thing. And when I was 16 years old, I just want to tell you this story. I was 16 years old. Typical teenager, you know, just didn't want to do anything, you know, watch Star Trek, that was about it. And I got picked to go to Boy State. You know what? You ever hear this? You know what Boy State is? Girl State. Do you have this in your states? In most states of the country, they pick 10 boys and 10 girls to go to the state capitol in their sophomore year, like for a week, to play government. It's like you would go to Sacramento here, and then you'd run little campaigns, and you'd like the governor, the lieutenant governor, the assembly, all that, right? And I went to this thing in Michigan State. It was for Michigan, and I got picked to go to this, and I hated it. I hated those kids who run for student council and class president, and they were just like, you know what I mean? You know, do you remember them? The people that always were running? Have you ever seen the movie Election with Reese Witherspoon? No. If you haven't seen this movie, go rent this movie. It's called Election. But it's like they'll tell you everything about why there was a Gary Condon, you know? It's like these people all grow up to become Gary Condons.
Vote for me. 7th grade class president.
It's like, all these politicians that go on to ruin our lives, it's our fault. We didn't give them enough swirlies in junior high, you know? Like, we didn't break them of this thing, you know? Whatever that thing is, that smarmy kind of... Non-violently, of course. But... So anyways, I just sit in my dorm room the whole week. I mean, I'm like, I don't want to be there. I just sit in the dorm room, listen to music. And one day I had the munchies, so I went down to the hall of the munchie machine. And this is back in the 70s. And,
They just come up with this new potato chip called Ruffles with the ridges, you know. And I liked them because I thought I was getting more chip per chip. You know, because it had the mountain of ridge. Ridge and another ridge of chip. And yet another ridge of chip. Look at all the chip I'm getting. You know, so I went out in the machine to get some Ruffles, and I look up on the bulletin board, and there's this poster that says, Speech Contest for Boy Savers on the Life of Abraham Lincoln, sponsored by the Elks Club. And I'm going, well, that's very interesting, because my dad had just gone to join the Elks Club, and the Fraternal Order of Elks. And but he didn't join. And this is 1970, folks. For those of you who are young, this may surprise you, but it wasn't that long ago. 1970, across the bottom of the application, you read, Caucasians only. 1970, okay? So my dad was there. So I knew this. I'm looking at this poster, I'm going, so this racist organization is going to sponsor a speech contest on the life of the great emancipator? Isn't this ironic? You know, I'm like munching on my chips looking at this thing. I'm going to go write me a speech. So I go back to the dorm room, and I write this speech about, you know, blasting the Elks Club. How dare they besmirch the great name of Abraham Lincoln? You know, I'm writing this all day. I'll really stick it to him, yeah. So the next day I go and I give the speech. The Elks aren't there. They hired a speech teacher from a Lansing high school to judge the contest. And I win! Stage and give the speech to 3,000 boy staters, and I'm like, oh no. I want to go back to my dorm room. Barbecue Ruffles. No, you have to give the speech. So I go out on this stage, I'm just scared. I'm like, oh God. So I give the speech, and the crowd, the boys all go nuts over the club, just giving it to the Elks, and there's this Elks guy standing there holding the Elks trophy to give to me. He's just like mortified by what I'm saying. And I said, I don't want your stinking trophy, and I walk off the stage, everybody's applauding, so this reporter comes up, he says, I'm from the Associated Press, and I'd like to interview you. So I give a little interview. I don't know what an interview was, and I was just like, I don't know, I was just sitting in my room, you know. Something just didn't seem right, I guess. You know. 2 hours later, I get a call from a producer at the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite. We'd like to put your story on the CBS Evening News tonight. And I'm like, well, no! It's like, I'm thinking no amount of prayer soul can save me, you know? Just too much energy to pick up. So it goes on in the CBS Evening News. The next day, there's calls for congressional investigations. Hearings are held. Just a shitstorm hits all these private organizations that discriminate and segregate. Within 6 months, the Elks Club are forced to integrate, as are all these other clubs. And it's like, I'm like, whoa! To learn at 16 that you can accomplish so much by doing so little. I mean, and all you had was the munchies, you know what I'm saying? And I started thinking, wow, what else can I do, you know? So, skip 2 years later, and I'm 17, I'm going to be 18 in a few weeks. I'm a senior in high school, and I'm getting the SWATs, you know, the paddle. I don't have that anymore, right? You know, they get the paddle. Remember, anybody ever get the paddle? And there we go, fellow paddle victims. You know, they give us a wooden thing, and you start like whack you like your shirt tail was out, you know? Bend over, more. You know, it's like I come home one day, my ass is sore. pick up the paper, not the jump page, just the top of the paper, and it says, a constitutional amendment passed, giving 18-year-olds the right to vote. I'm going, whoa, you know, sounds kind of cool. I turn the page over, and it says, school board election in June, school board president retiring. So I'm going, whoa, damn, my ass is sore. So I call up the county clerk, and I said, yeah, I just read this thing in the paper about 18-year-olds can vote, and I'm going to be 18 in a couple weeks. I was wondering, can we run for office, too?
Well, what office would you like to run for?
School board?
One moment, please.
The guy comes back to the phone and goes,
yes, 18-year-olds can run for Board of Education.
Oh. This is cool. But then right away it hits me, oh, this is work, you know? So I said to the guy, I said, well, because I'm like, oh man, you get 1,000 petitions, or you have to pay to get on the ballot. I don't know. Well, so what do you got to do, like, to run or, like, get on the ballot?
All you need is 20 signatures.
That's it? 20? Man, I know 20 stoners who would sign anything. Long hair, he's running for school board, and he's got only one position on his platform:
fire the principal and assistant principal.
I thought it was two positions, principal and assistant principal. They demeaned it. One, you know. Well, the adults of the community went crazy, and they thought, "Well, we got to stop this hippie, right?" So. Six adults take out petitions. They're going to win and not going to get this kid on the board. Not realizing that they would split up the majority adult vote, I end up winning with a minority of votes and become the first 18-year-old in this country elected to public office.
Within 9 months, I convinced the other school board members to fire the principal and assistant principal.
And it's like, you know, God, you know, I'm learning, like, once again, so little work for so much good. And that's what I'm trying to say here, is that we've got to, like, get the word out to the people on this campus, to the people in this area, to the people in this country, that you don't have to do this 24/7. You don't have to be out there like the Greenpeace kids on the table out in the commons, you know, sitting there till they get the last damn signature. God bless them, you know. I mean, you know, thank God they exist. But, you know, you don't have to do that. You can, if everybody did just a little bit, from your lazy boy even, this country could change for the better. It changed for the good. It changed now. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to broaden our sense of what we call politics, and we've got to open the doors and take off the invisible do not enter sign, because you don't know our lingo. You don't know how it works. You mean you're not willing to come to a 3-hour meeting? What's wrong with you? You know, it's like, no, I'm not. I'm a slacker. But I care about what's going on. Isn't there a place for me somewhere? Yes, there is. There is. All right? Here's what I want you to do. I want people in this room to start running for office. I want, seriously, I mean, the only reason the wrong people are there is because we don't run. They run, you know? And if people don't vote, but that's all they got. Them, you know? You know, you have precinct delegates here in California. Do you have, like, what's your smallest little office? What do you call it here?
Governor.
You don't mean Governor Gray Davis.
Gray Davis. Not Blue Davis. Gray Davis.
A Democrat.
Well, I guess we could have a little bit of the death penalty. I won't kill as many as the Republicans would, but I'll kill a few. And I guess it's okay to take some of the Enron money. I won't take all of it. I'm Gray Davis, and I'd like your vote in November, because I'm a fighter for our side, the workers and the people of the Democratic Party. Vote for me, Gray Davis.
Anybody here from Flint, Michigan? Anybody? Or from the Flint, Michigan, if you are, the Flint, Michigan of your state, wherever that is, East St. Louis, Illinois, Gary, Indiana,
Detroit.
Okay, look, you know where we come from? Rule number one, trust no one with two last names. If they don't got a first name,
Gray Davis.
They don't got a first name, they come from either Connecticut or they are the pod people. They're not us.
Gray.
What kind of parent would name their kid Gray? Why not Chartreuse? Pink. Purple Davis.
Oh no, I think we'll call this boy Gray. Gray Davis. And one day he'll be out there defending the Golden Gate Bridge from all the evildoers.
Don't hurt the evildoers!
So you need to run for office. You need to run for office. You need to get somebody to run for office in your neighborhood or in your class. We got to take this thing over. We can't let what happened in Florida ever happen again. You got to think about doing this, seriously. You know? You got to make that call tomorrow. Resign. Opening day, baseball season. Okay, who's got the first question? In the choir, yes. Could you sing the question for me, sir? Any tune will do. That's good enough. Yes, go ahead. Well, it could be a number of reasons. First of all, you're assuming he was reading. Right? I make a very strong case in this book that this man is illiterate. I might be wrong, just a guess. Well, there's a number of answers. One answer is, hey, shit happens. You know, there is no explanation. You know, we're not as, you know, prepared as it looks like we are in the movies. And in real life, that's the way it happens. Another answer is, could be found in any of the five questions that I've asked you to ask George W. Bush or any of the politicians that represent you. And security. These are my final words. how many times have you seen Moulin Rouge? I've seen it three times. But let me finish answering this question. We shot a piece on the awful truth down in front of the Pentagon, on the lawn out in front of the Pentagon. We weren't there 2 seconds, and they were all poured out of the building. I mean, they were all over us.
There must literally be, I'm not exaggerating this, 100 security cameras all around the Pentagon. I mean, the parking lot, the building, the lawn, the whole area. Has anyone seen one single piece of footage of that plane hitting the building? Did I miss it, or has anyone seen it? I'm not saying it didn't hit the building. It hit the building, but I'm just saying. Where's the footage? It's got to exist, right? Show us the footage. Because, you know, I think most of us, those of us who aren't pilots, would like to know how you fly something at 400 to 500 miles an hour into something that's only five stories high and score a direct hit when you just learned a little flight training in some dipshit training school in Florida. You know, just a question. Is that how they learned how to do that? Or was this a military operation? Somebody knew what they were doing. I don't know. I'm just asking a question, not drawing any conclusions. You know, I don't know. Yes, sir.
Is it on? Yeah. My name is Zachary Rainwolf. I'm a Native American leader here, and I just recently ran 4,400 miles across America for a meet, Mamiya Abu Jamal.
Good for you.
Thank you. I was just wondering if you could assist in the...
You're not going to ask me to run 4,000 miles.
No, no.
Make it easy on me, brother.
No, if you would, there is a documentary that's being filmed about it, and Danny Glover is supporting it, Steve Reeves, and we would like assistance from your... ask you to help.
Who is the we that's making this documentary?
Right now it's Jim Brosnahan, whose father is now currently defending Johnny Walker, who is, the only American Taliban, so I take my...
Are you guys, I'm not from here, but I mean, are you familiar with this endeavor? Anybody? Yeah? Anybody vouch for this?
I got it. No, it's not that. That's handouts. It's inside.
I read everything now. Okay, I'll help you.
Okay, thank you.
Where's it at? much.
Yeah, I have a question for you also. Yesterday, I was expecting a package from Amazon.com. The UPS driver.
Where did you use this one?
Hey, we were in Moulin Rouge.
Yeah. My UPS driver yesterday did not leave my Amazon.com package, and he said it was because there were black kids playing outside in front of my place. How do we change the hearts and minds of our neighbors and our other union brothers who we count on to deliver our packages for us?
Well, yeah. Well,
thank you for asking that question.
That's the job that people like you and I have to do, because you know that's where we come from, right? You know, and so whatever you hopefully said to that UPS driver to educate him, you know, might help the next time. And you know, if I can do the same thing and other people here do the same thing, it'll get better. So, but that'll teach you, for not buying the book at an independent bookstore. I have it on my website, Amazon. You go to Amazon, you go to Powell's, you go to Book Sense. You go to Cody's. Does Cody's have any books left?
Yes.
It's so depressing going up and down the coast here, stopping in all these towns. And I did not stop at a single store that had a book. And I called up Harper Collins and said, "What is going on with getting this book out here?" "Oh, we have many, many books out there." I said, "Why aren't you shipping them?" "Oh, we are. The warehouses are full of books." So the next town I went to, I said, "Can I go on your computer to your warehouse?" There's these two warehouses. You don't need to hear all this, but there's two companies in America that distribute all the books, Baker & Taylor and Ingram, okay? Librarians know this. And she pulled up the Ingram website, and it shows, you can see how many books they have in their Ingram warehouse. None in any of their warehouses across America, except for one warehouse in Oregon, had a couple hundred books. All the other warehouses had back orders of 3,000, 4,000, and 5,000 books that they had been begging HarperCollins to send them, and HarperCollins has not sent them the books. So it's, it's just this continual drag of trying to get this book out there. Yes, sir, in the center. You've got to speak up. You're 14 years old? Well, thank you for being here. Good for you. I apologize for the language. Okay, well, all the other teenagers here, raise your hand. Look at this. Yes, I do have some. I put there's a chapter in the book called Idiot Nation. It's about how we treat you in school. And I have some suggestions on how you can create a ruckus in your school. Now, don't get away with it. Don't buy this book. It's too expensive, all right? You're 14 years old, okay? Get somebody to buy it for you. Go to get it in the library. Go into those chain bookstores. Lay on their couch. Read the entire book like a man. Now keep your hands out of the bag, please. Huh? Well, let me see your hands. Jeez. Creeping me out. What is this? Anyways, but you know, well, listen, there's so much you can do. You can start your own newspaper, your website. The food is the last thing I need. Anyways, but seriously, let me just say this to this young man. You're protected under the Constitution as a citizen of this country. And there's a lot of things you can do in school legally, and you should think about doing them and organize other students. And remember that, don't get depressed and say to yourself, "Oh, the majority of students are apathetic." They've always been apathetic, okay? One of the big lies about the 60s and the 70s is that this town and every other town like this was just filled with everyone fighting the war and all this. No, it was a minority that was doing that. The majority of the students at Berkeley in the 60s were apathetic, just like they are today. That needs to be said over and over and over again. It's always the committed minority that affect change, whether it's that dude and his 12 Fisher guys, whether it's Marx and Engels, just two old farts warming their hands over a fire in the 1800s, talking shit to each other. That's all that was, just two old farts, boom, look what happened, all right? You know, a seamstress down in Alabama had tired feet, and she wasn't going to go to the back of the bus. That's all it was, one person, one spark, in the most unlikely of places, boom, all right? You can be that spark, and your friends can be that spark. Yes.
If a corporation or
Let this woman speak here, please.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'd just like to say, my name is Susie, and I'm here to say that I'm so inspired by you and your work, and I've been following sort of haphazardly your career. And
my haphazard career.
And, you know, something... You, I think someone like you, because I grew up with, you know, all the issues of being an immigrant and identity and all this stuff, and really having trouble finding a mentor or someone who really inspires me, and you're someone like that.
Well, that's kind of you to say that, but I'm a seriously flawed person.
Well, no, I didn't say you were not
a flawed
person.
I got email at AOL, I got Amazon on my website. Seriously flawed and full of sins to repent for.
No, well, the thing is that for years now, right, the seed inside of me has been growing, and finally I'm ready to do something about it, and I'm ready to be the change. Good. And so a week from this weekend, I'm going to start shooting my own show, right? And it's very much about what you're talking about and the work that you're doing, and very much inspired by that.
And how can we see this show?
Yes, yeah, so I would not only like to show it to you, but it's a pilot that I'm shooting, because for so many years I've had all these ideas in my head, right? And watching the work that you do.
Do you have a tape that you want to give me, and I'll take a look at it?
Yeah, well, we're shooting the first a week from this Saturday. So, yes, definitely. And I'd like you to participate in any way you can.
Okay.
Like, I'd like to...
Why don't you bring your camera here tonight?
In the car.
Okay, we'll go get it. I'll tape something for you here before we go.
I only have a still camera. I only have a still camera with me.
All right. Well, does anybody have like any kind of video here that you'd loan her for afterwards, and I'll tape something for the show? Who will donate this to this young woman? Who will do this? Ooh, this is the man over there. See him over there with the camera? He will tape something, and you can put this on your show. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Hang on a second. Here we go. Okay. I think something's wrong with the microphone.
Yeah.
Okay. Listen, we're going to run into a bit of a time crunch here, and I did want to get a few questions in. So I'll tell you what. How are we doing here? Can we just take this for 5 more minutes here? Is that? Yeah. Okay. All right. So why don't we do this? In fairness to everybody, we'll do like a lightning round of questions. And if everybody will do this, we can get a lot of questions in. Everybody can have their say. So, but here's the rule: the question can't have more than 10 words, and I won't say more than 10 words in response. Is that okay? All right. Who's got the first question? 10 words. What's my favorite movie? Clockwork Orange. Am I still banned from borders? Good question. When am I running for office again? I already ran. Now it's your turn.
How has being Catholic informed your work?
How has being Catholic informed my work? If that isn't clear by now, sir.
Yes,
you bet.
Class action suit in Florida.
Yes, there is. We won't hear the end of it. Yes.
Are you aware of the proposition to make your vote count in California?
No. Is that a joke?
No.
What is it? What is it? I'm out of words. What is it? You actually, does he have passed a law here? Every vote has. What a novel idea! I am stunned! Can I tell people in other states about this? Yes. What do I think of the Fox News Network? Next. When will TV Nation be on video? All of it. As soon as I can buy the rights back to it from the evil Sony Corporation. In the aisle. Yes. Did I what? Yes, when she was 8 in 1992. Don't hold it against her. Have some mercy. In the balcony. Let the women speak. In the balcony. Saudi jet fly around America to pick up all the bushes.
What happened until after we shot the first thing.
Well, there you go. That's how it happens. Just like that, you know? Don't think too much about the title.
Well, that's the thing. I've been thinking more about the ideas and the title. So what's the framing like right now? Huh? It's both of us?
Okay.
Be really?
Yep.
So we need to get Hi, I'm Susie Chen, and welcome to my show.
I'm Michael Moore. I'm on Susie's show.
Very special guest tonight. I'm thrilled, and I hope everybody is. I'm going to kind of repeat what I said to you earlier, right? Which is the thing that got you to come on my show to begin with, right? And what I was saying is that all of my life, I had been sort of searching for a mentor or someone to inspire me or to guide me in a way and sort of allow me to realize my own dreams, right? And watching your career, your haphazard career, and watching it haphazardly, right, got me to this point, sort of a self-realization and actualization where I realized that I wanted to have my own show in an effort to touch people, mm-hmm. to inspire, and to
to express passion, right? Because I've lived and traveled all over the world, and I've had a wacky life, and I've broken bread with everyone from, you know, members of royal families to homeless people and everything in between, right? And after that, what I realized that I'm only impressed by one thing, not by titles, not by money, not by anything except for passion, right? Because that is this little fire, it's this little flame, right?
Yeah.
And it's infectious.
And it's the thing that gets snuffed out on in us at quite an early age.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah,
so
you know, we're told that we're not good enough, that, you know, who do you think you are?
How do you survive that?
It's been a hard and rocky road, definitely. I was just telling this woman that I feel right now sort of like a emerging butterfly, right? After a very long time of wiggling around as this little worm, you know, and then...
So you feel like this is what you want to do now, do this show?
Well, what I want to do is not... It's not about the show. It's not about photography, because that's also...
but you want to communicate to a large group of people as much as you can.
Yes.
And what's the show going to be called?
Oh, actually, we're still trying to figure out what the title is going to be.
Yeah, we'll just make one up right now.
Well, for the moment, it's World Susie.
Oh, well, that's good. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Just stay with that.
Yeah.
World Susie. Yeah. All right. And I get to be on the first episode, right?
Yes.
Which is what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, like absolutely.
I'm on the pilot episode.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know what's really great about pilot episodes is the special guest star that you never expect to be on the show.
And who is that?
And it's not me. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Jello Biafra. Jello, please. Sit right here. Look at this. It's a star-studded pilot episode.
Hello.
Look at this.
Cookies.
I mean, this is incredible, you know? All of us have eaten them. We're still standing.
Right
so,
on.
Thank
right
you very
on.
Much.
Well, I wanted to let you know
I'm
wasn't
starting
poisoning
to see
you.
Paisley and flowers and suddenly it's a whole new dawn.
Well, the thing I wanted to ask was just...
Oh, don't go away, Jill. I need you out here.
Oh, well, I'll ask an interview question first.
Right,
is that a Michigan State hat or a Stanford hat with mold on it?
it's a Michigan State hat, yes.
Why doesn't it say MSU? I mean, S seems like it would be...
It's Spartans, because it's... No, it's
right,
not the
I know,
Spartans.
I know.
It's
just
Spartan.
So weird.
It
even
weird.
Says S on their helmets, and they're not from S World, so...
Yeah, why don't you wear it? Oh, yeah, it looks much better on you. All right, so what do you think of the World Susie show so far?
So far, I don't know what else is on. So,
nothing's on right now. Everyone's in bed. The only people watching this right now are the three of us. We wanted to see how it turned out. But next week...
But that's going to be the amazing thing, right? That it started here.
That's right here.
This is the beginning.
The first congregational
church. This is ground zero,
Berkeley,
right here. And we're going to see...
In a state where every vote counts now.
So we're throwing... Right, we're throwing a little pebble into the pond right now, right? And we're going to see where the ripples end up.
Well, good
right?
luck. I wish you the best. Okay.
But before you go,
I got an 8-year-old. I got to put to bed.
Okay. The very last thing is just just something for the viewers out there.
Yes.
On I know the end of your talk, you were talking about how young people or how anybody can make a difference.
Mm.
You know that you don't have to be holding a sign or sitting at that Greenpeace table.
Mm.
That you can do other things.
Right.
That's very much what my show is about. But I would like you to just, whatever you want to say about that.
Okay. Well, what I'd like to say is that anybody can make a difference, and you can do it in the smallest of ways. And all the great changes throughout history have occurred from the most unlikely people and from the most unlikely places. It never happens with a celebrity, a star, or somebody with a lot of money or whatever. It usually happens just somebody sitting around watching this right now, getting a little pissed off and thinking maybe they should do something. So I hope that person is out there watching. Thank you.
Or even simply inspired. You don't even have to be pissed off.
Yeah, they're just inspired.
A wicked sense of humor
helps.
I have something to add to that, I think, is that number one, if I'm still in the frame, am I?
I'm being yanked.
Thank you so much.
Let's hear what Joe has to say, though.
We're going to keep rolling.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
You're going to
Just need the hat.
Michael,
thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Did you hear my question?
what's taking
us? No, it was very
rapid-fire
and garbled.
Would you mind, would you mind introducing yourself? Yeah. So then, okay. You know, we know who you are and, you know, where you're coming from, that kind of thing.
Fine.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello, all you characters in Susie World. I just got drafted in the show, too. My name is Jello Biafra, and I think her shirt and her cookies are wonderful. And to add what Michael Moore was saying a second ago, doing something is better than doing nothing. Don't let any more radical than thou tell you otherwise. And there's some very simple things we can do to fight back against corporate feudalist dictatorship, just one-on-one. And this is the easiest thing to turn other people on to, too. Don't cooperate with them anymore. Let's decide, okay, Enron, Exxon, AOL, whatever, you can't have me, and you can't have my money. I mean, nobody can do it all the way, but for the, as much as you can, don't give money to global corporations, don't buy their products, don't patronize their chain stores, don't patronize their chain restaurants, don't give them your money. Try not to work for them either. Don't give them your time, your energy, or your talent. If you must work for them, just remember that the computer age has ushered in a whole new frontier of sabotage on the job. And don't hate the media, become the media. Supporting independent TV, print zines, net zines, pirate radio, you name it. And beyond that, all you have to do to become the media is go one-on-one with people you know at home, school, work, family. And if they start spouting mealy-mouthed, oh, Ralph Nader cost Al Gore the White House. If he was there, everything would be all better. Or putting down poor people for being poor, or, you know, buying into the BS, basically. Don't just tune them out as being hopelessly unreasonable or unreachable. Talk to them. Don't always work, but sometimes people sleep on things and wake up the next day. And Michael is strong on this, too, that we have to get off our high horse and get out into the community. And that's one-on-one becoming the media, telling people what's really up. It ain't the fault of welfare cheats or feminists or too many environmental laws or Japan or Osama bin Laden that things are screwed up. It's we're letting wealthy people take too much of the money upwards, take our money, and we keep paying them to do it by buying their stuff and voting their puppets into power. And we don't have to do that, so let's not do it.
Come on, don't you have something to say?
can I interview you for like 2 minutes?
I think they're trying to clear the building.
This thing that you have on, the actual Coke thing, has a subliminal... coitus right on it.
What's your name, Susie?
Susie. Susie Chan.
The C has a loop.
God damn.
And it's got...